Seth Shostak and
Molly Bentley and
WHFR each Tuesday at noon for Big Picture Science.
Big Picture Science steps back to get the wide-angle view on science and technology from where they've been to where they're headed.
So think big. Big Picture Science. You'll find it here on WHFR.FM every Tuesday at noon.
We're making waves on WHFR 89.3.
Hey, what's the big deal? There are tons of non-commercial, wide-open variety formatted radio stations that love to play local music in our area, right? All right, let me take that back.
You know there is only one real radio station here in the Motor City that is non-commercial, plays a wide variety of musical styles, and loves to support and play local music. And we have been doing it for almost 30 years. We are WHFR 89.3 FM in Dearborn, Michigan, from classical to hip-hop and everything in between. We even have great local news and informative talk shows. We have something for just about everyone. So keep your dial set here to WHFR 89.3 FM and WHFR.FM on the internet. We are the only radio station that is really making waves.
Housing discrimination. Would you recognize?
You're listening to WHFR Dearborn.
Good afternoon and welcome to Impact. This is going to be a fun show today. Impact is a show about individuals and groups making a positive difference in the community. This is a pre-recorded show. No, it's not. This is live today. Sometime you just go into your auto cruise lines. The views and opinions expressed on Impact are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio nor Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn. And I'm your host, Lynn. Today we're discussing the Henry Ford College Theater Program in general and the one-act plays, which are every spring in particular. And we're here with Jerry Jublinski, and we have some actors from those one-act plays. We have Bridget and we have Matt. So welcome, everyone.
Hi.
Thank you for having us.
Oh, thanks for being here. Hopefully we have a whole lot of fun with this. Tell us a little bit about your background, how long you've been acting. Bridget, let's start with you.
I started acting. My mother was always, I think she liked the idea of being a stage mom, so she has had me in ballet since I was 3 years old, and I did my first play, which was The Wizard of Oz at 4 years old, and okay. I kind of just... It stuck on me, you know. I liked it, and I've stuck with it all this time, and I recently switched over from a business major to a theater major, so I'm committing to it more than I ever thought I would.
What was your character in Wizard of Oz at 4 years old?
At 4 years old, I was one of the little, what are the midgets called?
Munchkins.
I was one of the little munchkins, and I was one of the little, the three girls that dance in the beginning. I know there's a Lollipop Guild, which is the boys,
right.
And then the... Something. I don't know. I was so young.
But you had fun.
Oh, I had a great time.
You got
the bug. Mm-hmm. Yes, I definitely caught the bug.
Have you been in other plays here at Henry Ford?
Yes. My first play I did here, I did Snow White, and I was Bubbles. It was a different variation of Snow White, which
okay.
I loved. And I love children's theater. It was really, really fun. And I did Three Musketeers,
okay.
which I enjoyed too. It was fun.
Oh, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What has been your most challenging role?
My most challenging role? Emily Brent in And Then There Were None, because she was old and she was kind of mean, and she had to die on stage, and I had never died on stage before,
okay.
so that was challenging for me. For a whole scene, I had to sit and not move and then just fall over at the end of it, and that was hard to not blink or move my face or anything like that.
But easy lines.
Easy lines, right, right.
And where have you been on stage other than Henry Ford?
Other than Henry Ford, I did Dearborn Youth Theater for Mary Bremer. So I've been on the Dearborn Civic Center stage, this stage. And you know what? I think that's been it.
Okay.
I think that's pretty much been it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, all right. How do you like the theater program?
Here, oh my goodness, I love it. I love it so much. There's such a good like camaraderie, and I've made so many friends, and I've met so many wonderful people and inspirational people and fantastic actors, and it's been a really, really positive experience for
Great.
Me.
And besides the obvious, how would you contrast the two programs, the business versus the theater programs?
Oh, gosh. It's definitely more of a family kind of way with the theater program. Everyone kind of knows each other, mm-hmm. and everyone, you know, it's just, it's more bonding. Where the business, it's, I didn't really know anyone else in my program. You just kind of, you go through it and you do it and you have a set goal and, you know, just like any program, but the theater program, it's just a little more intimate with your other people in your program.
Okay. Sounds like you're having a good time and you're on a good road.
Thank you.
Matt, tell us about Matt.
Well, I started acting when I was about 7 years old. My mom took me to this audition for Pippi Longstocking, and, you know, she thought it would be fun for all of us kids to do. You know, there was three of us at the time. So we went to the audition, you know, I sang for them, I danced for them, and I got the part of Tommy, one of the main roles, mm-hmm. and, you know, I caught the bug also, and, mm-hmm. you know, it just, the listening to the audience's applause, you know, and having them come up to you and ask for your autograph or anything. When, at 7 years old, that was great for me. And, you know, I didn't really plan on continuing with it, but then it was a recorded show. They had it on DVD. And so when I went to get my copy of the DVD, they were having auditions for A Christmas Story.
Oh.
And so they asked me, hey, are you here to audition? And I said, well, no, I was just here to pick up the DVD. Well, we really need you for the show. I was like, well, may as well audition. Why not? And I ended up getting the part of Flick.
Oh, wow.
The guy who sticks his tongue to the...
like the frozen bowl. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Well, you didn't have to do that for real on stage.
Oh, yes, I did. It wasn't frozen, but...
It wasn't frozen. That's a good thing. And your siblings? Brothers, sisters, older, younger?
I have two sisters, one older, one younger, and I have a younger brother. The youngest brother is not involved with theater, but my two sisters, they were also in Pippi Longstocking with me. But they never continued with their theater pursuits.
Okay, all right. And where else have you performed? Where else have you been involved with theater?
I've been involved with Southgate, Allen Park, Wyandotte, and now most recently Dearborn.
Okay, all right.
And of course for my high school also,
okay.
Cabrini in Allen Park.
Okay, all right. Oh, that's fantastic. What was your most embarrassing moment on stage?
My most embarrassing moment on stage, that's something to think about.
Okay. We can get back to that.
Yeah, let's go back to that.
Okay.
Oh, I just thought of it.
Okay.
During Pippi Longstocking, during one of the performances, I got silly string to the eye.
Ooh, ouch.
There was this birthday scene, and, you know, everybody shouts surprise, and there's silly string flying everywhere, and I got some to the eye. And that, I was like, yeah, happy birthday, Pippi.
Sort of changed the mood
a little bit. I was like,
oh, well, you were seven, mm-hmm. right? It's a good thing you didn't just burst into tears.
Oh, mm-hmm. yeah.
So you knew how to carry yourself even back then.
Oh, yeah.
Very cool. Mm. Okay. What's your favorite role so far?
My favorite role? I would have to say that my favorite role would be the professor from Dinosaurs this past fall. Because, you know, he's a quirky German character. I got to use an accent, which I've done accents before, but that one was different, unique. Okay. I hadn't done one before. And, you know, he was just a quirky guy and, you know, really interested in bringing these dinosaurs to life for the kids. And it was just a unique, enjoyable experience.
Wow. Sounds like a lot of fun and a lot of learning. Both of you are talking about different roles and different things that you've done, but you've learned so much through that, both as people, as actors.
Oh, yeah, mm-hmm. definitely. I think it helps in everyday life just because you observe people a little bit more, you know, to understand how different people are for different, you know, different characters, different roles, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and Jerry, tell us about you. Tell us about your background.
Well, I started off in biochemistry and engineering as an undergraduate and then transferred to communications. Part of that study involved theater, psychology, visual arts, and interpersonal communications. And then I went and worked professionally. I ran an alternative high school for a few years. I taught theater, guitar, and mathematics. And then I went back. Then I went and started to tour. I toured for about 9 years through the local Midwest area, these seven Midwest states, mm-hmm. as far east as New York State. And then I went back for my master's degree, and I started working more locally. And now I'm eventually having spent most of my last, 20 or so years predominantly teaching and directing and designing.
Okay. It's a whole crooked road.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Although I did, Matt and I shared the role of the professor that he just mentioned.
Okay.
In Dinosaurus. So that was the last time that I acted, and it was actually a dual role. We both played two roles in the show. Mm-hmm. We were the miners, I guess you'd call them. It's not quite the correct term. We were looking for oil samples. And that's how we discovered the dinosaurs living underneath the earth.
Okay.
And so at the beginning of the show, we had to play the professor who introduced the show and introduced the dinosaurs. Then we had a quick change backstage, and we played the oil explorers. And then at the end, we had to change back and cap off the show with the professor again. So that was my last acting role, and that Matt and I happened to share.
Okay. Of all the things you've done, do you feel that they all sort of led to where you are now and have helped you in some of your either roles or some of the directing you've done or what have you?
Oh, most definitely. Sometimes students come up to me and say, I studied nursing for 3 years. Now that's all wasted. And I said, no, it's never wasted. Mm-hmm. And I use an example from my own life. I studied French and Latin when I was in high school. In high school I went, I'm never going to France, and nobody speaks Latin anymore. Mm-hmm. So, right. But I ended up going to France. I ended up studying ballet and Marceau technique. And the terminology in ballet and Marceau technique is almost all in French. Mm-hmm. I did two workshops for two French dance companies. I translated and adapted Molière's Scapino directly from the French and mounted it twice now, once here at Henry Ford and also at Concordia University in Ann Arbor. And Latin, no, I haven't spoken a lot of Latin since then, but it has really helped me in terms of my work with scripts and, of course, the roots of Latin that have crept into English and the discipline of studying Latin, which is a very, very highly structured language. With a lot of declensions in it, has helped me tremendously in terms of my work with scripts, both as a director and as an actor. Mm-hmm. And then my engineering study, which I started as an undergraduate, helps me virtually every day in terms of the work that I do in the theater and helping students to understand the connections between how the physical reality of the scenery complements that acting reality that you create, and that if you know how to work with that physical reality, then that frees you up to really concentrate on what you're doing performance-wise.
Right. Have you written any plays?
I've adapted several.
Okay.
I've adapted not only Scapino, but A Christmas Carol by Dickens. I've adapted the Tales from the Arabian Nights, from the English translation. And I also wrote an original piece that we performed 2 years ago as part of the One Act Festival called A New Freedom, which is a look at adolescent substance abuse recovery in a family treatment center.
Wow. just thinking about that, wow. How many students are in the Henry Ford Theater program? And give me some background about what it's all about.
Well, about 30 years ago, Dr. Popovich was hired as the new director of theater, and he created the associate's degree in theater. Prior to that, there were only about 5 theater courses.
Okay.
And so that's grown not only into the associate's program, but also we have a virtual theatricality component, which we call the VTL, which has a motion capture certificate program, as well as film acting and motion capture acting, uses green screen and 3D rear screen visual projection and motion capture. And so now we have kind of two kind of interwoven programs, the traditional theater program that you can get the AA in with a specialization either in acting, directing, or technical production. And then we have the VTL with the motion capture certificate and the other classes. And so students go back and forth. You know, some students specialize in one or the other, but a lot of students then might take one or two in, you know, mm-hmm. in the other program. And so that was where, that's kind of the way the program's developed over the last 25 or 30 years. I came on board in the 80s as a movement coach for Equus, for the actors who were playing the horses in Equus. And then I was asked to join the faculty, and I directed the Theater for Young Audiences program for a long time, directed other shows, and have taught both in the acting and the technical production components of the program.
For those listeners who don't understand VTL, because it's relatively new, could you explain how that works, what the actors do, et cetera? You mentioned that it was capture and that sort of thing, but if you could clarify that a bit.
Sure, sure. I mean, this is not something I'm an expert in. I don't teach in the VTL component.
Okay.
But I do know the motion capture work, especially because I've done some motion capture work with the VTL, and part of my movement training with Marcel Marceau as a graduate student dovetails into that very highly, because in mime work, of course, you're working without objects and you're working out of your imagination. You know, there's little or no scenery or props, and so you're working with your imagination to shape space and to interact with objects and people that aren't even there, right? And so in motion capture, there are two major systems. There's a wired system where you've got cables running to your body, and then there's a sensor system where you get these little dots attached to your face if you're doing facial motion capture, and to your body if you're doing body motion capture, or both. And it captures your movement, if you can imagine sort of a skeleton that has a skin. The image on the computer screen is that skeleton, and the sensors capture how each part of the body moves, right? And the computer memorizes it, okay? And then what you do is, through another process and another set of software programs, you can lay whatever skin on top of that human skeleton that you want. So you could become a witch or a monkey or an avatar or a, you know, or an animal or whatever it is, right? And so now your movement is translated into the animal or the human movement, right? Tom Hanks in Polar Express, that's how that was done, right? In Avatar and many other films now. And so you can create typically unrealistic characters that you have to used to have to do a lot of makeup and elaborate costumes for because they were unrealistic. Now you can do them with motion capture. And so you've got a screen behind you, and it's a rear projection screen, so you can stand in front of it and you don't cast shadow, it doesn't cast projections on you, and it's a three-dimensional projection surface as well, so the audience wears glasses and sees the image in 3D, right? So you can project scenery behind the actor, which is exactly what happened with Matt and I in Dinosaurus. It was a cave environment, and there were several different scenes, different parts of the cave. And so there was the cave environment, right? And then you can also project either animated or motion-captured characters onto the scenery. In Dinosaurus, they were animated, so they were pre-recorded and created by an animator, not by motion capture. And so the dinosaurs walked and talked around in the caves, talked to each other, and sometimes talked to us, right? And we talked to them and so forth. So you interact with this image, right, that moves, because it's another character, it's a projected image. So that's the three-dimensional component, right? The projection screen and whatever you put on the projection screen, right? Whether it's scenery or characters or whatever you want, because you can layer the images. You can, you know, lay one on top of another, on top of another, on top of another, and create these transparencies so you can see all the way back to the original image in the background, right, the scenery, and then whatever else you want in the midground and foreground. So that's that part of it. And then green screen is where you you record typically an actor, right, against a green background, right? And that's one of the primary colors of light, and so you get this kind of neutral blank background. And then you can, for instance, record him or her and project that actor in front of some scenery, and the actor is acting in front of scenery that he never acted in front of. He just acted in front of a blank green cloth or wall, right? And so, of course, these techniques are used a lot in television commercials and film now, especially in fantasy film, where you have to have these elaborate sceneries, right? So it's an important component of learning not only film and television, but also live stage, because projection is being used more and more on the live stage. And virtual characters. There are even some shows where the performers are on different continents, and they're captured and they're projected, and the performance is taking place in a third location entirely.
Oh my gosh.
Right? So there's all sorts of these possibilities with the technology and the acting skills, which is why that the VTL teaches both the technological aspects of how you actually make this happen, and it also teaches the performance aspects, right? Mm-hmm. Film acting, right? Like, how do you act for a camera? How is that different from acting for the live stage? And motion capture, how do you work with the sensors, get a character recorded, how do you relate to other characters, present or absent, you know, how do you relate to the scenery,
wow.
Right? So we have this integrated program that allows the actors to study that component of performance or production, as well as the traditional performance live stage in front of a live audience, as well as the traditional stagecraft, regular scenery and props, costumes, the way that it's been traditionally done for thousands of years.
Let me bounce this one over to Matt. How difficult did you find it to do your acting, because you are interacting with things you can't see at some level?
Right, exactly. Like, the dinosaurs are in 3D, however, the dinosaurs are in 3D, but is there a spider on me?
Yes, I'm sorry. Okay. Oh my goodness, I'm like trying not to interrupt you. It's alive. It's alive.
Okay.
It's small, but it's alive.
This is live radio.
I'm sorry. Okay, continue.
That's all right.
Okay.
The dinosaurs were in 3D to the audience who were wearing the 3D
exactly.
glasses.
Mm-hmm.
But we as actors, we weren't wearing 3D glasses, so, you know, we were interacting with, you know, a flat surface with nothing in front of us
right.
to interact
right.
with. Now, when I first saw rehearsals for Dinosaurs, and I saw Jerry and the other actor, Mike Cochran, interacting with these invisible images, and like, wow, that takes a lot of imagination, that takes a lot of work to, like, make this believable.
Right.
And so, you know, I followed their lead, and, you know, I tried to imagine where the dinosaurs would be and how I would react if they were there, according to my character.
Right, exactly. Okay. Mm-hmm. And did you find it somewhat easy once you sort of knew that Dinosaur 1 is here and Dinosaur 2 is here and that sort of thing, and you knew that you had to, this one was the good guy, this one was the bad guy kind of thing?
Right, right. Yeah, it did get easier as time went on, you know, but as with every show, you know, it gets easier as you go on. You learn where the dinosaurs are, how they relate to you. Is this a threat to me? Is this something that I can, like, observe and learn from? And yeah, my character, mostly he wanted to observe the dinosaurs, get evidence from that of their existence, and profit from it.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Jerry, once you have the 2-year VTL degree, where do you go from there? Is there more education down the road, or do you try to get a big break at that point, or what could I do with that if I have that degree?
Well, I mean, you can be 7 years old and do a show and then go out and try to make it in the professional world.
Right.
But that's going to be very difficult for most people.
Sure.
So, you know, we are still an associate's degree program. Mm-hmm. And so we recommend to all of our students, whether they've gotten the certificate, just some classes, or the AA, that they continue their education. Mm-hmm. And their training. So Dr. Popovich has a senior seminar that helps the actors to prepare for transfer into BFA or BA programs. And a lot of colleges and universities like transfer students because they're a little older, right? Mm-hmm. A high school student is typically around 18 coming into a theater program. Our students are in their early or mid-20s. We've had people in their 30s win the scholarships when they transferred. And so we help them prepare for their portfolio auditions if they're in tech, or their acting auditions and their applications. And Dr. Popovich has done a lot of research into this area, has been to a lot of conferences, so he knows what's current. And he helps the students both in Acting 3, which is where you prepare a lot of your audition material, and in that senior project class to make a good preparation. Typically, those auditions are in January or early February for transfer into the fall. So you have to prepare well in advance.
Yes.
Of course, the colleges are looking for your general transcript, your general GPA. They're looking for your theater background, what classes and what shows you've done. Mm-hmm. And of course, they're also looking very much at your audition pieces when you go and audition for them. And so we try to help them prepare as much as possible. Some students do a little bit of professional work before they move on, but for most people, that's just maybe extra in a local film, or maybe they get lucky and do an extra in a television commercial. Unfortunately, there's not a lot of professional theater in this area, so occasionally someone will get maybe a little bit of professional work, but you have to remember that it's no longer an apprentice system as it was maybe up until 30 or 40 years ago. Now it's like any other profession, right? If you want to be an RN, you better have that RN degree, and you better have some good letters of recommendation behind you. And so when you're auditioning for an actual professional job, you're auditioning against people who have BFAs or MFAs in acting, right? So if you expect to be that adept at it, probably need to have that same or a similar background.
Right, right. I would think so. Are there other colleges in the area, four-year universities in the area, that sort of continue where the VTL here leaves off at some point?
Well, not in terms specifically of the VTL, because the VTL is a rather unique program.
Okay.
There are other colleges and universities who have similar components, but not a lot of them. Many will teach film acting, because, of course, that's very common. But some of the other components are relatively rare. But there are many universities, both in and out of state, as well as out of the country, that will help you learn the conventional acting and conventional stagecraft.
Okay.
Just 2 years ago, we had one of our students who actually got into the Scottish Academy of Dramatic Arts and so went to complete his studies there.
So it does give you a ring up, or whatever the word I'm looking for, to have that background, because it is unique, and it's it sounds like a fantastic program. That's fun too at the same time.
Yeah. Well, it is a unique program, and Dr. Popovich and Alan Contino, who's the chief engineer, and Gary Glazier, who's one of the instructors, bring dozens of years of experience to it. The Tempest was our first VTL production in, 2001 maybe, 2002. and that took Dr. Popovich about 9 years to realize from the conception to the realization.
Okay.
Now we do a VTL production once every several years, depending on how much production time is needed to,
sure,
to prepare.
But that's exciting.
Yeah.
That's really
yeah.
exciting. And then there's another aspect of the program I'm not really familiar with, and that's your high school component, where you actually have dual enrolled students, as I understand it. So someone is completing a senior year in high school, and they've also done some work on their two-year degree from Henry Ford. Could you explain a little bit about that?
Sure. There's a couple of different parts of that. The first is the one that you alluded to, where juniors or seniors in high school can come to the college and start taking college classes. And that's in all the departments,
okay,
and theater included, and earn college credit while they're still completing their high school diploma.
Wow.
And then they can either continue here or they can transfer to a four-year university once they graduate. And so that's one part of the program. Then the other part is where we have young people. It could be any age. I think the youngest actor we've had on stage was about 7. Who come in and play the roles of young people in particular shows. For instance, this summer we're doing A Raisin in the Sun, and so Travis, the son, he's got to be about 10 years old, so you need an actor somewhere in that age range to play that.
Okay.
Right? And so they enroll through us, our CL2 program, for a modest fee, and they're trained and they're involved in the rehearsal process and the performance process, just like we train any of our other actors. We have right now, currently involved in the One Act Festival, we have a student who's an example of both of those programs. He started with us about 10 years ago. He played in To Kill a Mockingbird. He played the young boy who's the friend of the girl whose father is the lawyer. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Did a wonderful job with that. And so he's been with us on and off now for almost 10 years. And now he's in high school and he's doing theater at his high school. And he's also directing one of the shows in our One Act Festival. And he's also acting in another show in the One Act Festival.
Mm-hmm.
And he's getting ready to transfer to a four-year university to continue his theater education. And he's looking at several different programs, and he'll be auditioning in January.
Wow. We talked a lot about actors who are part of this program, and you, as you mentioned, there are other parts of the college that have the same type of program or a similar program. What about behind the scenes so far? There's a lot that goes on behind the scenes. I don't know if people really realize that the set building and music and some of the other aspects of a production. Are you employing some high school students to be part of the behind the scenes, or is it strictly on stage?
Oh, no, they can be part of any part of the program.
Okay.
And so they can work with scenery, construction, and painting. They can work with sound design and execution. And of course, now a lot of that is computerized. So
mm-hmm.
it's digital editing and playback. And we have a wonderful music department, has some classes that complement that, as well as the telecommunications department. And we encourage that cross enrollment. I always tell actors, you should study dance. You need to study dance.
Mm-hmm.
You need to study voice, right? You may not be a musical theater triple threat dancer, singer, actor,
right,
but you need to study some of it, because there are many straight shows where you have to sing or dance a little bit, right? And they can be involved with lighting. We have a wonderful lighting designer who also works at the Meadowbrook Theater, Scott Ross. And so he instructs the students in lighting execution and design and operation. You can be involved with costuming. We have a wonderful costumer, Judy Fletcher, and she teaches classes in makeup and costuming,
uh-huh,
and costumes our shows. And properties, which I supervise together with scenery, for both realistic and non-realistic period and contemporary pieces.
Okay, wow. What about the music? Do you use live musicians as part of a musical production, or are you using some sort of CD or something in the background? Or?
Well, when we produce a musical, which is generally about once every 2 years, Kevin Dewey is typically the music director. He's the he's from the music department, and we have a wonderful music program here, so he's involved with many fine musicians. Anthony Lai is also on the faculty. He is a guitarist and sound engineer, and he actually composed the original music and underscored the Dinosaurus show. And so, yes, we're working with musicians for the musicals. Mm-hmm. And then we sometimes work with Anthony and other members of the music faculty in various capacities, depending on the needs of the show. Oftentimes, of course, we use pre-recorded music, music that exists previously, and use it to enhance the show. Same thing with sound effects. Okay. But occasionally you have to produce original sound effects. Mm-hmm. Anthony did some of that for Dinosaurus. And so you can get involved at that highly technical level, mm-hmm. right? Or you, if you're a good carpenter, you can build the scenery. And that is a very underrated skill. Scenic carpenters are in high demand. I'm actually looking for a part-time scenic carpenter right now in several capacities. So that is just crucial. Otherwise, the actors have no place to stand except on a bare stage, right? And even in Dinosaurus, which had a huge, approximately, 36 by 15 foot high projection screen, there was still a raked stage that we built. We built two towers, one on the other either side of the screen, that had technicians hidden in them to use the 3D and 4D effects that were in the show. So even in a virtual show, there are traditional scenographic elements that work together with the screen to immerse the audience in the scenic environment.
Wow. And if well done, you don't even notice as an audience member. It's just blends right into your experience.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Right. They're doing some wonderful stuff on Broadway with projections now.
Okay.
And even in small theaters, locally as well as nationally and internationally, using projections either as full background scenery or as elements of scenery or elements of different scenes. There's a show on Broadway now, I understand, that explores an autistic young man's journey to New York City to find his kidnapped dog, right? And they use projections to communicate to the audience some of how he perceives the environment that he's moving in as he goes from his small town to the big city and has to encounter all of these new and different things.
Right.
And so it gives you a view inside of his mind, right? And so you can use projections in a wide variety of ways.
Wow. Amazing. Have you done anything with any animals on stage, whether you're talking about, you know, having the proverbial donkey out there or dogs, cats, that sort of thing?
Well, actually, yes, exactly.
Okay.
Right. We did Pippin. We had several live animals and then a goat and I forget what else. Some chickens, I think.
Okay.
For Frankenstein, we used a live dog. You know, that's a kind of critical part of the script, right, where the dog's alive and then the creation, the Frankenstein monster, strangles the dog when he becomes threatened by him. So we had a live dog for the live scenes, and then one of our theater technicians built a replica of the dog, a life-size replica with fur and stuffing, because the deceased animal had to be carried on stage after it had been strangled.
Right.
So we don't see the strangulation, we just see the results.
That's
so she built the puppet for that.
Okay.
Right. And so yes, Bridge to Terabithia, we also had a live dog on stage. And then I'm happy to announce that I was not part of this, but there was a magician who rented the theater a number of years back who brought in a tiger, so I just stayed on the opposite side of the building when that was happening.
Good plan. Wow. So pretty much it's a college theater, and it sounds like you guys have done everything. Have done or will do. Do you ever take the show off campus? Do you do performances elsewhere?
We would like to. Dr. Popovich is currently working on a grant to tour Dinosaurus to underserved school districts in the state of Michigan. So we'll see what happens with that. In the past, we've wanted to tour our Young Audiences program, but there are insurance issues with that when students go off campus if they're injured, in transit, for instance. So that proved to be kind of an expensive thing. So when we do the student matinees for the schools as part of our Young Audience program, whether we do it for elementary schools or high schools, the schools either bus or carpool their students into us.
Oh, I see. Okay. All right. That makes sense in our litigious society. What do you think, in the years of theater here, what's been the largest cast? You can do very, very simple plays and maybe have one or two characters, and then you have the other extreme where you have an entire stage full of people.
Well, I don't have an exact headcount, but this past winter semester we did Hairspray. That was a very large cast. We've done Oliver, The Music Man, Tommy, are just a few of the ones that come to mind that have large groups of people, in the 30s or 40s, and then larger groups of technicians as well, typically, because the shows are bigger.
Right.
And so, yeah, you do have those large shows. And then, yes, exactly, you have the small shows as well. Bug, which Dr. Popovich will be directing a year from now, in next spring semester, has a cast of five. Right, and they're actually going to be working for two semesters, the winter semester, in terms of preparation and actor training, because it's a very intense show with only five characters. It's a very intense drama.
Mm-hmm.
And so these five actors are going to get two semesters of intense exposure to the acting techniques and to, of course, the script.
Wow.
For performances at the end of spring semester. So we try to mix that up, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that you get used to what it's like to be in a big show. A big show can be chaotic, especially for beginning actors, because they kind of get overwhelmed. And it's like, well, what do I do? I've got nothing to do for three scenes. What do I do? Well, I'll just distract somebody, right? Well, that's a great way to get fired if you're a professional, right? So you got to learn to sit in your own little 18 inches by 18 inches and not bother anybody, right? And if you want to scream, you got to do it silently inside your own head, right? Because you can't disturb anybody else. And then the small shows where you get this intense, intense experience. And then, of course, in the middle are the medium-sized shows like Raisin in the Sun, which I think is 8 or 10 or 12 or something like that, which is still a pretty intense experience because it's a small company. So we try to vary that, both because that's what educational theater does, get you used to everything, and because that's the kind of thing that you should produce. You should produce a variety of types of shows.
I would agree, yeah. And Bridget was talking earlier about the camaraderie that you develop with the people that you're working with. I would think that this bug production with five people,
whoever will be cast in that will get... And doing it for two semesters, because typically it's only one semester for a show, I'm sure... Yeah, you'll get really, really close to them. I'm attached sort of to my co-star now because we had known each other before, but we've gotten closer now. And it's nice when you like them and when you get along with them and when you're actually friends with them, because I think it translates on stage when you have a chemistry with someone, know.
You can see it on screen. So,
yeah,
you can definitely see it on stage.
Mm-hmm.
What if you don't? What if you
don't know. Fake it till you make it, I guess. Make it work somehow. That's, the whole challenge. If you don't have the chemistry, then I think it'll really show how good of an actor you are if you can make it seem, even to the audience, you can't stand that person in real life, but to the audience, you have a certain energy back and forth, a rapport, and that's important. That's the whole thing.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Gosh, the time's gone really quickly. Let's talk about the One Acts. Jerry, I don't know if you want to start out with a little bit of background about how long we've had One Acts in the springtime?
Sure, yeah. We've been doing One Acts most spring semesters, not all. for about 18 years now. And the idea is not only to showcase short plays, but also to showcase student directors, and you typically in their first directing experience after they have studied directing and studied in our program for a while, and to give student actors an opportunity to work with peers, which can be a tricky thing, right, when your director is your age and, right, this is the first show he's directed, and you've acted in 15 shows, and it's like, how do you interact professionally and purposefully with each other, right? Because sometimes those kinds of situations arise. And so it's a fun festival because you get an opportunity to see a variety of works, oftentimes by name authors whose names that you might recognize from their full-length work. And so you get kind of a variety. And so we have four shows this year. Each is about 30 minutes long, and you'll be seeing all four shows in one evening. The first is Variations by Peter Appleton, directed by student Reba Neely. And it's about two couples having dinner and some of the troubles of one of the characters beginning to come out during that evening. The second is a classic, The Zoo Story by Edward Albee, directed by Christian Planka. Christian's a student I mentioned earlier who started with us when he was very young. And I'll let Matt describe that one because he's one of the two main roles in that. The third piece is called The Problem by A.R. Gurney, directed by Josh Nielsen. That's the one that Bridget is in. And I'll let Bridget talk a little bit about that one. And then the final one is 27 Wagons Full of Cotton by Tennessee Williams, directed by Anita Halsey Banks. And, of course, Tennessee Williams is a great chronicler of the mid-20th century South of the United States, a wonderful dramatic and poetic writer. And Christian is playing one of the three characters in that as well. And so those are the four shows that you'll see this year.
Okay. So the Zoo Story that Jerry mentioned, which I'm performing in, my character named Peter is sitting on a park bench reading his book and is approached by this other character. And the interaction between them, at first this other character seems very strange, and he starts telling stories about how difficult his life is, all the harsh experiences he's had to endure. And he tries to tell my character about his experience at the zoo. And you find out later about, I don't want to spoil anything.
Right.
But... he has an ulterior motive for telling him this story about the zoo.
Okay, that's fair. That's not a spoiler. Okay. Bridget?
The problem is a husband and a wife. The husband's a professor. His wife is involved in politics. And she's just kind of, they're playing games with each other. They're playing mind games with each other back and forth. They're trying to one-up each other, you know, and she... It's kind of a ploy, I think, for his attention. She's really trying to, you know, get him to flirt with her a little bit. And he's not playing into it. And finally, he takes the bait. And it's slightly competitive between the both of them, but it's very quirky and it's very cute. And same thing. I can't say too much because it would spoil the ending. But... Mm-hmm.
But that one is the one comedy. The other three are dramas. And so we have one comedy and three dramas this year.
Okay. All right. Anything else about the other productions? I don't know, Jerry, do you want to take the other two? Or?
27 Wagons Full of Cotton takes place in 1932. And it is about a cotton ginning, right? The picking and processing of cotton, and the competitiveness that occurs between a small mill owner and a syndicate mill owner, right? It's sort of the same dynamic that we see today about large corporations, working to control larger and larger market shares, mm-hmm. and the small businessman finding it more and more difficult to survive. Only this small businessman takes things into his own hand and burns down the larger gin so that the business can come his way.
Wow.
And the owner of the larger gin suspects that this is true but can't prove it. And the scene takes place all on the porch of the smaller gin owner's home. And between himself, the larger gin owner, and the smaller gin owner's wife. And so the dynamic among the three characters is what is explored, and how the syndicate gin owner decides to handle his suspicions is the crux of the crisis of the drama.
Okay.
And in variations, the secrets of one of the troubled characters is slowly revealed throughout the course of the story, and the friendships are tested. It's kind of a domestic drama.
Okay.
Finally, the character who has been struggling with starting to drink more because of his problems gradually reveals his problems, and so gets some kind of a resolution and healing from that.
Okay. Wow. The one act plays, I was just looking at the write-up. We're sitting on stage with the actors, are we not?
Well, actually, we're sitting very close to the stage. Typically, we seat the audience on stage. This year, we decided to do it a little bit differently. We're seating the audience in the first three rows of the house.
Okay.
So the seating is a little more comfortable. You know, sometimes people say, well, sitting on these hard chairs for an hour and a half or 2 hours is a little uncomfortable. So they've got nice, cushiony seats.
Okay.
But the performance is on the apron, so it's very, very close to them. So it's basically as intimate as if they were sitting on stage.
Okay.
And so these small cast shows, the largest cast is only four actors, so you get to know these four characters, and they are very close to you.
I love the one acts, and that is part of what makes it so special, is because it is such an intimate setting. I mean, mm-hmm. you literally can reach out. I'm careful how I cross and uncross my legs because you're so close.
Right.
And you don't want to trip anybody, but you can literally reach out and touch an actor right there, so it's fantastic.
And it's great training for the actors, too, you know, training on a proscenium stage where you have to project out to the back of a 400 seat house is part of theater, and it's a very important part of your training mm-hmm. to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also an equally important part to be able to play in an intimate setting with the audience close in what is closer to a television acting technique, more naturalistic, not as exaggerated,
right.
more emphasis on facial expression and subtlety of vocal delivery.
Right, right. Tell us how we can see these, and tell us actually when are these.
Well, we run the 18th through the 28th of June, so it's coming up in just over a week. Mm-hmm. Thursdays through Sundays, Thursdays through Saturdays at 8, and Sundays at 2 p.m. For two weekends. So there are eight opportunities to see the show. And you can purchase tickets online. Matt's going to give you the website to go to, because now you can do that either online, or you can do it also the day of the performance at the box office right before the show opens.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
So we very rarely sell out. So if you're not sure which night you want to come or if you can make it or not, you don't have to buy tickets in advance. You can buy them at the door.
Okay. Yeah.
And so that website is theater.hfcc.edu. That's theater, theatre, at .hfcc.edu.
And there's just a link there that says buy tickets, and you just click the link, and there you go.
It sounds pretty straightforward. And we talked a lot about some of the various educational opportunities also. If someone is interested now, as there's one other point I want to go back and catch too, but if someone's interested in becoming either a dual-enrolled student or after graduation from high school becoming part of Henry Ford's theater program, is there...
who should the person speak to, and what number should the person call, or do we look online? What's the best way to find out more?
Well, we do have a wonderful website, right, so that they can go to that website and learn a lot about the specifics of our program.
Okay.
And we have a wide variety of classes. We have over 40 classes. We don't offer that many every semester, of course, but they have lots to choose from. So students can take classes, and they can come and audition for our shows and become involved that way. If they're a dual-enrolled student, they would have to talk to their counselor at the school and express a desire to do that, and then they would just enroll in whichever particular classes they were interested in. If someone wants to find out more about the program, Dr. Popovich is the director of the program. He's the best person to talk to, and he's also the contact person for the VTL. But they can talk to any of the faculty. We're a small program, and we can point them in the right direction in terms of when they should start, how they should start, and the best way to proceed.
If someone is not involved with the college, they're not a student, basically just a citizen, could an individual like that audition for a production?
They could. However, if they are cast, they would need to enroll in a class in order to participate. All of our productions are fully mounted. They receive full costuming and full technical support. And, of course, they receive instruction as well as learning the show. So that's part of the way that we offset our costs. And, of course, if you eventually want to be involved in theater, that goes on your permanent transcript.
Right, so you're getting credit for it.
Yes,
so that's
exactly.
And this goes back a while when we were talking about Christian and seniors who are involved in the program, and you use the word junior. So you could actually be a dual-enrolled student going back to your junior year in high school?
I believe that that is correct.
Okay.
I'm not intimately involved in that, so I could be in error.
Okay, all right. But I'm just thinking that would be incredible to have 2 years under your belt by the time you hit college.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's spectacular.
Well, they're changing those programs a lot, too. They're under fluctuation, so I'm not sure.
Right, right. And we are running short on time, but thank you so much for being here, everybody. Jerry, any parting words? Anything you'd like to share with us about the program? Or
well, I think that the most important thing is, yeah, sure, you can see a DVD in the comfort of your own home, but that's not quite the same thing as seeing performance
right.
live,
mm-hmm. right?
And that the energy is different because you have people right
yes.
in front of you, right, in real time
yeah, right.
performing.
Exactly.
And it's a unique experience, and it's a wonderful evening out.
Mm-hmm.
Either alone or with a group. And so that's my advice.
Okay. Bridget?
Yeah, basically, same thing Jerry said. I think going to a play, I think it'd be good, like a date night, you know? People don't do that anymore. Theater, I think, is fascinating. It's so real, and it's like, you go and sit in a movie theater, you can't sense like the feeling, the energy in the air. You know what I mean? There's something about watching actors and being so close to a play and seeing them, you know, when you can see like sweat beads on someone's forehead, you know what I mean? If you can see an eyelash on someone's cheek, it feels more real and it.
And a spider on there.
Or that's right, like yeah, a spider dangling off of his ear.
He's gone now, right?
Yeah, he is gone. I think he's gone. Yeah, but it's just, it's really, really cool. And I think a lot more fun, a lot more, yeah, just a better feeling than going to a movie. A little more interesting.
Yeah.
Well, as Jerry and Bridget both said, you know, it is a live performance with real people. And, you know, you may be familiar with the show as you go to watch it. But, you know, it is real people and, you know, it's unpredictable. Maybe you see something happen that you didn't expect, or maybe, you know, there's a huge mistake and, like, as someone flies off the stage or something. I don't know. But it's unpredictable and, you know, no two shows are exactly the same.
Right, exactly.
And so just the experience of going and seeing a live performance is something
right.
totally different.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Let us have the ticket information one more time.
All right. You can buy tickets online at theater.hfcc.edu. That's theatre www.hfcc.edu and click on the buy tickets link.
Okay. And the production, one more time, is when?
The 18th through the 28th of this month, Thursdays through Sundays. Thursday through Saturday at 8, Sundays at 2.
Okay. And as you said, that gives us 8 opportunities to see these. And it's mm-hmm. 4 productions in one showing, so that's mm-hmm. even greater. Mm-hmm. Jerry and Bridget and Matt, thank you so much for being here today with Impact. Live. We are live. This is not pre-recorded. And Mark Hall, thank you so much for producing Impact for us. And thank you all for listening to Impact, the show about individuals and groups making a positive difference in the community. I will remind you again, the views and opinions expressed on Impact are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio nor Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn.
In the hills of Tennessee, set beneath a hickory tree, there's an ornery rifle shooting mountaineer. Oh, he loves a mountain feud, and he also loves good food, and when he goes home to supper, you will hear, oh, pass the biscuits for Randy, I'm just as hungry as sin. Pass the biscuits for Randy, give me some sop to sop 'em in. Since 9 o'clock, I've been sitting on a rock, a-shooting everyone in sight. I shot the coys and a dozen Martin boys. Shooting gives a man an appetite. Oh, pass the biscuits for Randy. Pass them and tell me goodbye. They're so heavy, Randy. I feel like I'm a-gonna die. Then he heard a rifle crack, and a bullet hit the shack, and another broke the dishes on the shelf. So he grabbed his trusty gun, 'cause the battle had begun, and he knew that he must then protect himself. Oh, pass the biscuits for Randy, I'm gonna load up my gun. I'll use your biscuits for bullets, I'll put them varmints on the run. He poured a ton of black powder in his gun, rammed the biscuits into place. He took good aim, oh my goodness, what a shame. Bang, the gun exploded in his face. Pass the bandage, Randy, I know that I'm gonna die. Darn your biscuits, Randy, I knew they'd get me by and by.
You're listening to WHFR Dearborn. Yo, you guys and dolls out there, how you doing? Welcome to the malt shop. We're going back to the 50s and 60s. So hang those fuzzy dice on the rearview mirror and grab your favorite squeeze and head on down to the malt shop. Here we are, back in the 50s.
Clock rock. 5, 6, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, rock. 9, 10, 11 o'clock, 12.